Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello. We know that homelessness is a problem in Anchorage and other parts of Alaska, both for families and for individuals. And organizations and municipalities have been writing plans to deal with the issue for decades. So are there workable solutions? What's happening on the ground level? That's the topic for today's edition of Alaska Edition. I'm your host, Ann Hillman. My guests today are Nancy Burke, a senior program officer with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, who will soon be Anchorage's new homeless coordinator. Also in the studio is Corinne O'Neill, the director of supportive housing for RuralCAP, and Brad Burnett, a case manager with Catholic Social Services, who works both at the Brother Francis Shelter and with Homeless Family Services. Everyone, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Brad, let's start with you.
Okay.
What exactly is a case manager?
Someone who assists people in getting services and making changes in their life.
And so you're working with folks who are down at Brother Francis.
Yeah.
What sorts of issues are people having? What kinds of questions do people have for you?
Well, at the shelter, we have an intake case manager who deals with the people when they first come in, and then they're, you know, sent to like a housing case manager or a case manager for vets. And I work with the mentally ill and substance abuse population.
Okay.
So basically I connect them with services through Anchorage Community Mental Health or treatment or, you know, whatever.
What sorts of services are available?
For substance abuse, there's not a lot, particularly for detox. I mean, that's a huge problem, is there's not a lot of detox centers and just open beds in general. But I mean, you have Dina Koi for pregnant women and children, Clithro, Aquila, Teuton. I mean, there's services out there, but as far as getting a residential bed, it can be difficult. And then the hoops that you have to jump through to get the bed, too, is also problematic for the population.
So there's a lot of barriers.
For people in their situation, yeah. I mean, you have to have a TB test, a physical, to get into a lot of places.
Okay.
And like SARP, the Salvation Army program, you can just show up, and if you pass a UAM, can BRAC 00, they'll take you. But most places...
If you pass a...
BRAC, a breathalyzer.
Oh, okay.
So if you're not under the influence of any drugs, then they'll take you right then. But for the most part, you need a physical, a TB test, just appointments and hoops that are difficult for the population we serve to get done on their own.
Okay.
So, and, you know, a lot of times I'll take them to the appointments, you know, and make sure that they get the, you know, what they need
so
to get into the program.
You're very involved in people's lives and in like guiding them in some ways.
Well, you have to be, yeah.
Right. Corinne, when you and I were speaking earlier, you talked a lot about how when people are experiencing homelessness, a lot of it starts with relationship building, and that sort of builds off of what Brad was saying. What do you mean? What kinds of steps do you guys take to build relationships?
I think it all depends on the person, but I think outreach and engagement services are really an essential part of working with people who are homeless, and that's really building a rapport, building trust, helping people gain hope in their lives, and that can be anything as simple as sharing a cup of coffee with somebody to start that relationship, to actually helping them fill out a housing application. So at RuralCAP, we really try to meet people where they're at in their journey and their process.
And Brad was talking a little bit about barriers. Are there barriers? I mean, and he was talking that people have to get TB tests and all these different things to get into housing. I guess let's take one step back. When people first start looking for housing and decide, okay, this is the path they want to go down to, what is the first step?
Well, I think in general, a lot of the services in Anchorage and a lot of the housing is really maximized. So there are long waiting lists for a lot of things. There are various conditions on things sometimes that make it difficult for for people to go through it. But I think at Rural Cup, we really try to screen very well on when we start working with somebody to figure out where we can fit them in the system. But the system is very complex. And so you really, the importance of case management and good and intensive case management is really to understand the complexity of the system to work people through it. Because even sometimes, you know, at an administrative or a director level, I don't even understand all the eligibility criteria and nuances of the system.
The system is complex. In fact, I guess that leads us straight to the, let's jump to you, Nancy. All right, the system's so complex, I don't even really know how to start asking about it. And you know, I've had lots of opportunities, so can you explain sort of what she means by the system is complex?
Sure, how long did you say we have?
We've got 20 minutes. I mean, what is the system like for people who are seeking housing?
The system, Anchorage is our largest community in the state and has the most service providers, and the two guests with me today represent two of the largest and most involved with the homeless population. So chances are they're going to visit with the shelter and with Rural Cap at some point in the process. But there are many, many other providers. There's, you were referencing the alcohol services, there's mental health services, there might be services needed to clear up legal problems. There are so many sectors engaged in a person's world at that point. And when you're talking about the people needing to make all of the appointments and the people trying to figure out this system, we're also talking about people who've oftentimes experienced trauma. And so they are probably using substances to cope with that trauma and really pretty not prepared to navigate a very complex social service system. And I think each of us personally has had experience of doing some of the things that you do, like someone will approach us and, you know, I'll say, oh yeah, so-and-so does that, why don't you give them a call? And sometimes I'll call, you know, with them to learn more about the system, and constantly learning new things. Oh really, you have to do that before you can get there? And that's one of the things we've been focusing on, is how do we clean that up? How do we make one door for someone to come in? So if that question were asked to any of us in the community, what can I do? I'm homeless. Oh, do this. And I think one of the pieces that Corinne and the other leaders of Anchorage have worked on is a data system, a joint data system that all providers can be working and putting data in around not only resources that are available, but what services a person might be accessing and where can they get additional services, and sharing information so that we act more like a system that's connected rather than a system that's disconnected. And so we're looking forward to that coming online in the next year. It's really exciting.
Okay, so step one is open a door to access different services. Brad, with your work, are people eager to access services, interested, scared?
Depends on the person, but all the above for, you know, depending on the individual. A lot of times they're scared, you know, they have, like, I forget your name?
Nancy.
Nancy spoke, the trauma is involved, or, you know, they have traumatic brain injuries, so they're forgetful, they don't remember appointments, or the substance abuse issues there, and then the mental health issue, and, you know, which came first? Is it substance abuse, mental health, or was it mental health, and they're using the substance to cope with their mental health symptoms? It's just, it's, but yeah, for the most part, people want help, but it's difficult because when they want help, it's almost like you have to take them right then and get them there, but it's difficult to do that because of the things that are required to get the help. So,
and so this misconception that a lot of people in the general community have, that folks who live on the street maybe want to stay on the street, isn't accurate, is it?
I don't think so. And for the majority of the people would prefer not to be in the shelter.
And so for people who get from the shelter into programs at, say, Rural Cap, are there restrictions and requirements once you get into different housing types?
We have a variety of programs, but I think our Housing First programs for people that with the most complex and challenging needs are probably the most successful model in Anchorage and nationwide. Housing First is a best practice where we provide housing first as the platform, and people are very, very receptive to that service. I mean, I think there aren't people in Rural Cap's experience that don't want a safe place to live and call their own. I mean, I think that's something that every adult really wants in their life, is a place to call home. So people are very receptive to that service or to housing when you offer it. So we offer the housing as a platform, and we find that that breaks down barriers for us to build relationships with people, and then they are more successful and they're more stable too, so that we can actually approach them and offer a multitude of services. So those services in a Housing First model are optional, but we really generally have just about 100% participation in the majority of services that we offer.
So what's included in a service?
So the main service is case management service, which would help people broker a variety of services, whether that's navigate employment, whether that's to navigate medical appointments or healthcare appointments. And then generally our programs also access mental health assessment services and therapeutic services. So those are our primary services, but then we offer a basic level of just tenancy support. I mean, many people that we see on the street have grave disabilities, and things that we think we know how to do on a day-to-day basis, they don't really know how to do, whether that's not overloading the washing machine or just how to be a good neighbor to their next door neighbor. And so we work a lot on just being a good tenant, retaining your housing to a certain standard. And that's a really important skill that I think often we assume people have, but many people we see with complex needs and disabilities don't really have those skills.
And another community program that's working on developing those skills is actually the Anchorage Gospel Mission. And we have a short video talking about some of the programs that they offer.
Larry Aldrich arrived at the Gospel Rescue Mission in 2000. He was homeless and suffered from substance abuse issues. For him, the mission was his last chance at survival.
I was homeless for many years. I finally got to the point that my health was gone, and I just had this overwhelming sense that if I don't do something, I'm going to die out here, you know, and I really didn't want to die. And when I walked through the doors here them years ago, I had the sense, you know, this is my last dance.
Now, almost 15 years later, Aldrich is the program manager of this organization. The Gospel faith-based operation that provides both temporary and long-term housing, food, and classes to homeless men and women in Anchorage. Courses help clients with financial management, substance abuse, and even art therapy. According to John LaMontia, the mission's director, of the 16 people on staff, 14 of them, like Aldrich, came through the program.
They are dealing with a person who is faced with the very same issues that they had to deal with, and it's much more easy for them to understand. They're able to say, been there, done that, so to speak.
Mayor Ethan Berkowitz has made homelessness a top priority since entering office. Earlier this month, he announced the implementation of a homeless coordinator in the municipality.
I understand why the mayor's office has made homelessness a priority. It has been an increasing problem.
LaMontia estimates that the mission's one-year program has around a 15% success rate, a statistic that he and his staff are working to improve. Although the problem is a daunting one to face, one thing keeps Aldrich motivated.
I think the men, you know, it can be tough and it can be disappointing, you know, but when you get the opportunity to actually see the one grasp it and grab hold and the transformation, you know, that makes it all worthwhile.
This is Casey Ellingson in Anchorage.
And so a couple of things jumped out at me in that video, and one was the success rate of 15%. Can you measure success rates with these programs? Is that typical?
I was struck by that number as well, but I immediately thought, well, 1 year, when you're working with the population that they described, that's a short time. The time it takes for people to stabilize and the relationships they need to build, I believe, happen in permanent housing, that a shelter is a temporary setting. And it's hard, I think, for people to completely delve into some of the core issues that have caused maybe their addiction or led to their homelessness in a temporary setting. The work that we've done through the trust and with our partners has been really pushing the system to house people in housing they can stay in the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. That's when stability comes.
To give you a sense, Carluck Manor, which is 46 units of permanent supportive housing, we retained 86% of our tenants last year. So generally permanent supportive housings have between 80-85% success rates.
Okay, and that's what Housing First is, which is this term that's tossed around all the time. And Nancy, you're soon to be the homelessness coordinator. Is Housing First a critical component of the solution for homelessness in Anchorage?
It is for Anchorage, it has been for many other communities. We've been following fairly closely the work that Seattle's done with Housing First and Denver. And the communities that have really transformed their homeless population have used that as the core. It's the base for social service delivery. And really the idea is, it historically came about when we downsized from large institutions in this country and started helping people go into the community. The funding streams that came along with that were grant-based. And grants allow you to have flexible service delivery, and they can allow you to do some things that Medicaid and other financing streams don't allow or limit. And as the country has moved toward financing more of their services through Medicaid, some core populations have been left out of eligibility for Medicaid. This is why Medicaid expansion and reform is also a really important topic, because it allows for financing for the people that we're seeing, that Brad's seeing every day. Many of them are not eligible for those resources. And so without service delivery money, putting someone in housing doesn't make as much sense. But Housing First allows people to go into housing, and they pay for their rent. It's not a free home or a giveaway. It's allowing people to access affordable or housing that they can pay for. Housing is very expensive, and so we can get them into housing and then allow the services to flow into their home in the way that they're able to deal with it, and in the best configuration for that person.
So it really allows for a lot more individualization. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that all Housing First models are based around one building, like with Carluck Manor? Or can you do Housing First at scattered site? Does that work?
Yeah, scattered site is a second. Well, when we talk about Housing First in Anchorage, because our core project, the Carluck Manor project, and some others have been based around a facility, Housing First as a building comes to mind for people, but it really is just this model that people are allowed to find housing that they find desirable and that they can afford in the community. So it could be rentals across the community. It could be single family home if people wanted to rent a home together. Choice is a really important option in the Housing First model.
Okay. And RuralCap is offering some scattered site rental options. Is that hard to find, easy to find? How open are landlords to it?
We really at RuralCap want a continuum of housing choices. Again, that's part of the Housing First model. So we've worked to build that continuum. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of scatter site, and it has been difficult for us to find scatter site options in the community, which is a large reason why we have taken to developing housing. Carluck Manor isn't our only property. The Supportive Housing Division owns 16 separate properties, and you probably wouldn't even know where most of those properties are. Most of them are, you know, 6 or 10 plexes that are in various neighborhoods. And so our option is to provide choice and also to meet people where they're at. So if they would like another housing option than Carluck Manor, they could move to another one of our properties.
Okay. You know, we've been talking a lot about people who need very supportive housing and a lot of different services. There's also a lot of families who experience homelessness who don't necessarily need to go into a place like Carluck Manor. Brad, you also work with families who are experiencing homelessness. What sorts of options are available for them? You mentioned a grant earlier.
Well, the ESG grant is what I work under, and it allows us to provide first month's rent, security deposit, and then a 2 month subsidy. And they can rent from anyone in the community. And we have a case manager at Catholic Social Services. Her sole job is to make connections with landlords in the community and explain, you know, this is the program, this is the supports that will be in place, you know, because most of the people have evictions or criminal history or other barriers to housing. So we try to make that connection with the landlords that are willing to give, you know, people a second chance. And there's quite a few out there that do that.
And because some people, one of their major barriers is they just don't have a good rental history to prove to landlords.
Or a no credit history or bad mm-hmm. credit history. Yeah, exactly.
And so oftentimes with the families that you work with, once you get them into housing, do you spend much time with them after that? Is that the pinnacle of success, or what comes after housing?
Housing is kind of just the beginning. It's getting them somewhere where they feel safe, and then you work with them to make sure that they maintain their job and that things are going well, that, you know, they have clothes, that they have furniture, that they have the things that they need to maintain a home.
And so are there other resources available for people to get tables to eat off of?
You know, Love Inc. is the main one that we refer people to. Mm-hmm. And then we receive donations as well.
How do families end up coming to you?
Either they're referred for the ESG grant.
Mm-hmm. And for any of your services.
Well, for Brother Francis, they're referred by the intake case manager, so mm-hmm. they're already there. But for the ESG grant, they're usually referred by Nine Star, McKinnell Shelter, self-referrals, the 211 will give them our information, and then they're screened, and the ones that fit the ESG profile go there. And then there's another program that's BHAP that works with people that need more intensive case management, that, you know, are starting at zero, you know, living out of cars without a job maybe, and, you know, need a little bit more.
And what is ESG? I should have asked before.
That's the Emergency Solutions Grant is the name of the grant.
Okay, and BHAP?
I'm not sure.
Basic Homeless Assistance Program.
Thank you.
Okay. There's so many acronyms running around in the world. It's hard to keep track. What other misconceptions do you guys think people have about people who are experiencing homelessness? Are there many out there? Or do you feel like people in the wider Anchorage community understand what it means to be homeless?
Yes. I think there's a lot of pressure on the community right now because we're seeing homelessness is so much more visible now than it's been in prior years. And I hear from community members that it's a lifestyle choice and that people would choose that over doing something else. And I think you spoke to that you find that most people are interested in doing something else. And Seattle found that when they opened their first housing program, they had 75 units and they offered 78 people the units and filled it. So when you are able to, when people know that you're working to help them to figure out their problems, rather than trying to plug them into a certain program that is a peg that they have to be plugged into, I think people genuinely start opening up and working with you, and you have a chance to develop that relationship. It doesn't always happen. Some people fall out of the service system and back into homelessness, but like Corinne said, the rates of retention are very high in the program when you're aligned with your tenant and you can form that relationship. I think that's a stereotype.
Yeah, I think the other misconception is that maybe just keeping people in the homeless lifestyle doesn't sort of cost us anything as a community, as a society. But I think the reality is that keeping people in the lifestyle of homelessness or not investing in services does cost our communities a lot. It costs that business, profits from people not wanting to visit them because of the homeless problem. You know, it costs us a tremendous amount in ER visits. You know, it doesn't let us invest in things like community policing in our community because we're so busy responding to calls for people on the street. And so I think we could invest our emergency resources more wisely in this community, attract additional investment into this community if we actually put our funding into homeless services.
And so it's a problem we could solve.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think we believe, people all the time say, we can't end homelessness. We really believe we can end homelessness in Anchorage.
Right. Thank you all very much for being here. And thank you all for listening. If you've missed anything, you can catch it on alaskapublic.org.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.